Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the lottery of all things Whitey Boy.
It's good night, freaking Irene!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Time! And those had enough people, the fire truck out!
On this episode of the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast, we are joined with Joe and Lauren Murphy. Lauren is currently ranked number 3 in the flyweight women's division in the UFC. She's on a dominant win streak and headed to get that shot at the championship belt. Joe Murphy is a Henzo Gracie black belt, the head instructor at Henzo Gracie Riverstone in Texas, and a high-level black belt competitor. Let's get to know him. Let's go.
And what we got
coming. We'll get right into it. So Joe and Lauren, the Murphys, back. Let's get right into it. So you both are martial artists, mixed martial artists, professional martial artists, with great things going on these days. And I like to start by just, where did the passions come from? Where did it initiate for both of you? I mean, obviously, it's a separate story to start, and it's amazing that it came together and it keeps growing. So let's just start with there. Again, happy Valentine's Day. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I totally appreciate it. And now I'm not alone on Valentine's Day, so you guys are great.
Kind of where it started for me was way earlier than Lauren. I grew up wrestling. I started wrestling in like seventh grade in middle school. And, you know, that was kind of my first taste of combat sports. And I had such a big change in my personality and in my life that I got from wrestling. It gave me just tons of confidence. You know, I was kind of a picked on, small, bullied kid. And man, it gave me so much confidence that in some way, shape, or form, I've, you know, stepped out on that every single day of my life since, you know, that first time in seventh grade. Lauren's was a bit more accidental, but
yeah, I was a little bit older when I started going to jiu-jitsu. I took my son, he was 8, so I took him to a jiu-jitsu gym, like, so that he could do martial arts, and I kind of pushed him into it, like, go ahead, buddy, do your thing. And then I took the adult class, but I really liked it. I started going all the time.
And that gym that she ended up going to, kind of on accident, like she literally picked out of a phone book back when there were such things as phone books.
Right.
I was stationed in Alaska with the Air Force, and they had a program where a guy came on base 2 nights a week to teach jiu-jitsu for free. I started training with him for a few months, and, you know, really quick, 2 days a week wasn't enough, so I started going downtown to the academy, and that's where Lauren and I first met. Yeah. She was training for her, I think, second fight.
Yeah, right? I think it was my second fight.
Very first day I ever met her, you know, I had plenty of wrestling experience, and they wanted us to, you know, work together a little bit. And, hey, Joe, go over there, work with Lauren. She's getting ready for a fight, so, you know, shoot on her and get a work on her takedown defense. Poor Lauren didn't even know what takedown was at the time.
Yeah, I was, like, totally. I was pretty new at the gym still. I'd only been there really a couple months, and I'd done, like, a couple months of jiu-jitsu. I'd never even watched a UFC or, like, watched a wrestling match. I didn't know what it was. So when Joe tried to take me down, I really just didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
So her sticks her hand straight out, poked me right in the eye, like two knuckles. Yeah. Give me a black eye first day I met her.
Well, that's a hell of an impression. I mean, it's lasting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's been getting better and better and better every day since.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been more black eyes on both sides, and yeah, in the good way, obviously.
I still always get those dirty looks, though, definitely.
Yeah, unfortunately, right? Like, no, I didn't do it.
Yeah, we always talk about that, man. We just moved down here when we got this. We got super lucky, scored a beautiful house down here in Houston, Texas. And when we moved in, it was right after Lauren fought here in Houston. She fought Andrea Lee. And, man, they had a banger. It was an awesome, like, super violent, back-and-forth, crazy fight. And we're moving in and, like, carrying in boxes and stuff, you know. And poor Lauren just kind of forgets, like, her day-to-day job. She's got two big old black eyes. The neighbors are just mad dogging.
Yeah, they were, like, I just was staring at me, like, wide mouth open.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it.
The car's in one piece and the wife isn't. There's something up.
So we get that every now and again, but it's really funny, you know, people that know us, that's a hilarious thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you go to the grocery store, you get dirty looks, like, no, no, seriously. Let me tell you what she does. They're like, come on.
Yeah, I just don't waste my time anymore. I'm like, think what you want to think, you know.
So then, obviously, so that blossomed into what? I mean, obviously, you had your first training session. Lauren's getting ready for a fight. You're helping her wrestling-wise. And then where do you progress from there?
Yeah, we both kind of came up in our little kind of hometown promotion for Lauren, the Alaska Fighting Championship, the AFC. We both got our starts in pro MMA there, and that's what led me to meet you the first time when I came down to Wands. Mike Madrid from Alaska moved down.
I totally forgot about Madrid. Oh my God, that guy.
Dave Mazzani moved down there.
Chippendale.
Alaskan ties to Wand Fight Team. I went down for a camp, and that's where I met you the first time. But yeah, that kind of, you know, was the start of Lauren's pro MMA career. Like I said, I was stationed there with the military, so my time was limited. When they said, "Hey, it's time to go," she came with me. We were plenty in love, and her mixed martial arts career just kept on taking off. She ended up winning a fight here in Houston for Legacy when Legacy was still around. Got signed to Invicta while I was stationed in Florida. Went on an awesome streak there. She went 3-0, won the inaugural Invicta Bantamweight title.
Yeah.
And then got signed to the UFC at Bantamweight.
So how did, like, your relationship, I've always had this thing where, like we talked last time, is you can't cross the line or you can't make a female training partner feel uncomfortable. Obviously, you didn't make her feel uncomfortable. But, like, how did you both kind of navigate those waters? I mean, was it just some natural thing or was it progression over time? How did the relationship kind of come about?
I think because we were such good friends first. Yeah. I mean, that team was pretty close, the MMA team that we had in Alaska. We would go to practice. And then it seemed like every weekend, like, a bunch of us from the team would get together. Like, they weren't just my teammates. Those were, like, my homies, too.
Right.
And so we would all go out. Like, I used to drink back then, so we would all go out to, like, the bars in Anchorage, and everybody get just hammered together. We would go out to eat after practice a lot. There was a guy that owned a sushi restaurant that went to that same martial arts gym. And so we would always go to his sushi restaurant after practice, like, all of us. It would be, like, a group of, like, you know, 4, 6, or 8 of us. And we would all hang out, and I don't know, we just hung out like friends for a really long time before we started.
Before we were dating or anything.
Yeah, before we were dating, so. And then I guess, I don't really know, like, when.
Yeah, even the, going back to that same, you know, that same team, we both, without question, you know, knew that each other worked hard, we're serious about what we're doing, so. I don't think that either has ever, like, questioned the dedication or the work that, like, the other was going to put in. But for the beginning of Lauren's career, I didn't coach her. I wasn't her coach for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's true.
Yeah, we had a really, really great coach to begin with. We got super lucky. A guy named Pat Applegate definitely changed both of our lives, you know, still changing a whole lot of lives where he's at today. And, yeah, I trusted Pat wholeheartedly. And, obviously, so did Lauren. So. He was the right guy for the job, and that's kind of what took us to Houston in the first place. When I moved away from Alaska, Pat had moved down to Houston to start teaching here at a bigger Gracie Baja. And when we moved to Florida, it was only about 10 hours away. But man, I thought, like, hey, we're going from Anchorage, Alaska to Florida. Like, we're going to have so many just unlimited amounts of MMA and jiu-jitsu to choose from. And we got to Panama City, Florida, and there was nothing.
There was no MMA training. So I would drive to Houston to go see my coach. And I drove there. I drove from Panama City to Houston to get my blue belt. I was still a white belt in jiu-jitsu. I had, like, 3 pro fights, I think, but I was a white belt, or 4. I think I had 4.
Yeah.
And I'd never gotten my blue belt. So I drove to Houston to get my blue belt from my coach. It was 2012, and he had just moved to Florida. I had moved with him. Our other coach had moved to Houston. We weren't in Alaska anymore. And so anyway, I went to go get my blue belt. And while I was in Houston getting my blue belt, Invicta offered me a four-fight contract, I think. And also Legacy called me for a fight. We were the first televised female fight Legacy ever did. Yeah. So, anyway, I won that fight. And then I stayed in Houston for pretty much a year. I would drive back and see Joe, but I stayed and did a bunch of camps. I fought four times that year, so it seemed like I was just always in camp. You know, as soon as I did one fight, they would call like a week later and set me up for another one. And so I'd go through like another 3 month training camp, but I did it in Houston with my coaches, you know, and then I would go back and see Joe like to visit. It was like
for like a couple weeks, honestly, man. That was, it was a good year, but that was a tough year. It was hard. Not like hard on our relationship, like we were crazy in love like we always have been, you know, but man, it was sad to see her work so super hard. Like, I loved having her back home, but from the very beginning, man, Lauren's been super dedicated and super driven. So when they called and the opportunity was there, she, you know, like I said, I've never questioned her dedication, her commitment, whether or not she was, you know, serious about what she was doing. And that's a perfect example of it. She could have for sure just stayed in Florida, hung out on the beach, didn't have to do anything, you know, like,
yeah.
So she drove back to Houston after a couple weeks. She was like renting a room, like sleeping on an air mattress, working her fucking ass off.
And it was kind of crazy too, because I don't really think about this. Well, I think about it all the time, but I don't really talk about it a lot. But when I went to Houston, Joe and I had been dating a couple years. We were really serious. Like, I knew I wanted to marry him. I knew he was like the one. I'm pretty sure he felt the same way about
not just because it's Valentine's Day, for real, totally.
So, but then I would leave him for months on end and go train with a team that was mostly men. My coaches were men. I actually rented a room from a guy, and I was like living in this dude's house, like in his guest bedroom, sleeping on an air mattress. And Joe Lizick was never, he was always super supportive. He never like got jealous. He never like, just some of the like crazy stuff that I've seen other fighters go through with their significant others, yeah, where they're not well supported, or like I've seen guys that will go away for camp and their wives or their girlfriends get really jealous. I've even seen people try to sabotage like other people's fights. Like, you go to fight week and your significant other is like super needy, or your significant other is suddenly very jealous, or you guys are fighting a lot. It's
just like even just, to be honest, man, like fight week and the fight preparation is such an intense process to, in my opinion, to even like need just regular shit. Like that week, man, you got to just let it go. Like,
yeah,
take care of yourself for a fucking week, you know, like take care of yourself for a week. Like, they got some serious.
I've seen it. I've seen fighters that are like literally in the locker room warming up for a fight and their girlfriend is bitching at them or their boyfriend is bitching at them. We were at a jiu-jitsu competition like 2 weeks ago, and there was a girl competing, and she was losing. And her coach, I don't know if it was her boyfriend or her husband or whatever, but he was just berating her, like screaming at her, like, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. I don't know. I always feel so lucky that Joe has never been like that. Like, through my whole career, he was never jealous. Like, when I got signed to the UFC or, like, when we would have, like, really big moments, he never, like, I don't know. He just was never shitty about any of it. He was never shitty about me training with guys. And it really solidified a lot in our relationship, I think, to know that he was going to treat me like that, even when things were stressful. You know what I mean? In other situations, I don't think a lot of couples would have done it.
And it happens, like, you've both experienced, you know, high levels of competition. And Joe, you've been doing it since you started. I mean, since a young kid, wrestling is the most demanding thing anyone can do. And so for you to understand that and then to get into a relationship with someone that's going through that, it's you have that bond. You've beat the shit out of each other, you know, and in a good training way. You know what I mean? Like, so you say, I mean, you do it with male partners too, like to the point where you've developed deep friendships from the guys that you train with because you're fighting and you're pushing each other so far, like to the point where, you know, I could kill you.
It's a pretty primal thing, you know, but mm-hmm. It does. It also creates like a very unique bond, you know?
Yeah, that definitely.
For sure, like over time changed, you know, when we started in Alaska, it was at a very small group. So yeah, we did on the regular. We sparred together, wrestled together, grappled together, trained together. When she would go to Houston, most of her career she's trained with primarily men, like older
right.
men. So she's always kind of the smallest in the room and the definitely not the biggest and strongest, you know?
Right.
So after we made Houston a full-time thing, when Lauren was doing her camps there in Houston, even when it was when we were living in Florida, it was about then when I kind of stepped out of the role of training partner so much. So we don't live spar, you know, striking mm-hmm. more. We still roll together just about every day. You know?
Joe lets me win though all the time, which I also really appreciate. Sometimes we'll roll and I'll feel like I'm doing really good. Like I'll be really slick.
She is doing really
and
good.
And then I'll watch it. We'll go back and watch a tape of it. And he's doing nothing. He's literally doing nothing. So we don't go like live very much because Joe would destroy me. So, but I meet a lot of other jiu-jitsu wives, like couples in the room, and their husbands are black belts or brown belts. And usually their wife is like a purple belt or a blue belt. Yeah. And they're always like, does Joe let you submit him? I'm like, yeah, yep, sometimes. And they're so crazy. They're like, my husband never lets me submit him.
I think you got to, man. You got to do that, you know, especially if she's doing the right things. I mean, that's part of coaching. Like we were just talking about that coach, you know, screaming at his, even if it's not, you know, a girlfriend, a wife, a student in general, I would.
Yeah, coach no, definitely.
Patient like that. It's crazy.
But well, he knows. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, you do it with any good training partner is if your skills are higher, you are trying to build them up to your skills. So you don't yeah. just take advantage of them all the time. If they get the win, you give them the win. You're kind of like, man, I remember when I was, you know, white belt, beginning blue belt, if I caught a purple belt, I was like, you don't celebrate on the mat, but in your head, you're going crazy. Exactly. Yeah. And you know that person too. You know who it was. So then after you stopped being the training partners, is that when you moved into more of the coaching side?
Well, I got signed to the UFC when we were in Florida, and then we were like, he was getting out of the military full time, and so we were like, okay, we need to find a place to move to. We can't keep doing this, you know. So we decided to move to Arizona, and we went to the lab, and there's a base out there, so he could still do his reserve duty in Phoenix, and there was a big, good MMA gym we could train at, too. So Phoenix seemed like a good spot. So we went out there, and I had my first UFC fight the year that we moved to Phoenix. And Pat was supposed to be in my corner, even though he wasn't really my coach anymore. It was my first fight without him. And I felt like he got me all this way. Like he got me to the UFC.
Yeah, for sure. Like you got me there, you know, like we need to have you there, have you
yeah.
in the corner, you know?
Yeah.
And like the day before, I think he got sick. And so he didn't come. He ended up like having to cancel. Actually, it was like 2 days before.
Yeah, he let us know. I mean, a couple days out. But.
And so we like contacted the commission and I was like, well, we'll put Joe in the corner. Like just, it was kind of on a whim. It was like, well, you're here. Like, yeah. It'll be fine. Like you've seen me train. Like by then we were married and I was like, you know me really well. And so I put him in the corner and he was so good. Like he was such a calming presence. And like, it just felt so good to have him there that I was like, okay, you'll always be in my corner now. Like you're never going to not be in my corner. Yeah. So that's how that started. And honestly, it's like, I wouldn't fight if Joe couldn't be there now.
I just watched a video from your tough tryout. Mm-hmm. And was that you, Joe, like coaching her?
No, that was Welch.
Yeah, I was going to say, not at the tough tryout. That, I think I had reserve duty that week.
Yeah.
So, but it's like those, I think for some reason, a jiu-jitsu coach is a calming voice. And I don't know, maybe it's because it's so many tournaments, because you have to be like heard through the rest of those people. But, like, I've always found that, like, you know, I coach stand-up, and I have more energy, I guess, and it's kind of more like you're trying to give them the energy, whereas my jiu-jitsu coaches were always very calm, put your hand here, do this here, you're doing good here, move here, and you kind of, like, you can process it easier.
I like that, too, man. I like, you know, when you get a good competitor who listens well, it's like playing a real live video game, you know?
Yeah.
Man, I like getting in a good coaching battle too. Though.
Yeah, he likes yelling at coaches.
Yeah. It's fun. Sure.
I just had DJ Jackson on, uh-huh. and I had a story from Worlds in 2013 of him almost getting in a fight with another black belt. Oh, and I was standing behind him, and he didn't, like, he's never told the story. And so I was like, look, DJ, I don't know if it's you, but, and I told the story. He's like, holy shit. He goes, I'm like, I was standing behind, it was over Beats headphones.
Really?
But that's one of those things, like the arguing is like, when I hear two coaches go at it, you're kind of like, what would happen? You know, like, not on the mat, but what would happen if they have to do it now? So you get signed to the UFC. I mean, that's, did you guys at least party? Like,
we were pretty excited about it, but man, like I said, from day one, Lauren's been, when has been very serious, very committed about it. So I think really as soon as the UFC announced that there were women allowed, like, we both kind of knew that that's, like, we're going there, you know?
Yeah.
It won't happen. Kind of a matter of time.
Yeah, I was still in Invicta, but...
She was killing it in Invicta, went 3-0, won the belt, you know? And it's at the time, it seemed like it took forever, like, to get out of that thing.
Yeah.
Invicta, like, ran into a dead end, like, just came to a screeching halt for a minute there.
That's right. Yeah, they didn't have any shows for, like, almost a year.
Yeah.
Like, I was the champ, and then all of a sudden they had all these problems. Like, they, like, didn't have any shows for, like, a year. Their matchmaker, like, disappeared, mysterious
yeah.
fucking circumstances.
It was
just
was
a bunch
on.
Of fucking weird bullshit was happening. And so, hey, move it.
If anyone wants to be on the podcast, too.
It's all good.
I just wanted to go to the UFC. Yeah, I really, like, that's what every fighter wants. Nobody, like, dreams of being, like...
Staying in a regional
of
promotion.
Staying in a regional promotion their entire life.
Right. Yeah.
If you become a champion of a regional promotion, everybody's like, I want to go to the UFC, you know? So that was definitely where we were headed, but...
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anybody that walks into a gym wants to go to the UFC.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we didn't... I guess... I don't know. We definitely had the, like, hey, we're in, you know, the moment that, like, hey, you're signed. You know, we did some jumping up and down and some yelling, but it was literally right to work. I mean, she got signed, and, like, the next weekend we were packing our shit to move to Arizona. So
how do you get signed to the UFC? Like, what was the process? Obviously, you knew there was talks and there's negotiation or whatever goes on, but, like, I've never heard anybody tell kind of the process. You make yourself known, you become – you know, great at what you're doing, and then they take notice. But what is the, like, what is it like getting drafted or like?
I mean, yeah. I was the Invicta champ.
I was 8-0.
I knew, like, being undefeated helps a lot. Like, I also knew this, like, I wasn't like, I'm not like Paige VanZant. Like, especially back then, I'd only been sober like 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, I really hadn't been sober that long. I was kind of older, but I was undefeated. And so I was like, man, like, I don't want to fuck around with this. Like, if I'm going to go to the UFC, I need to get in the UFC and whoop somebody's ass. Because, like, if I lose in this regional promotion or if something goes wrong, they're never going to take me. You know, like, right. I was like, they're never going to sign me. So
it wasn't easy either, man. Literally every single fight that Lauren had, like, they were trying to get her beat. She had nothing but tough fights.
Yeah, I had
nothing
a pretty tough roster in Invicta. But so I wanted to go to the UFC, and I kind of started making that known, but I was still in my Invicta contract. So the way the contract worked was this, there's a championship clause, which is pretty common. Most promotions have a championship clause in their contracts. And so if you're the champion of the promotion, the deal is that your contract continues to roll over for every fight, because that way you can't just become the champion and bounce, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I hired a manager to help me
to litigate
all of it. And, you know, he kind of went back and forth with Invicta a little bit. They weren't super happy about me wanting to be released. And I didn't really realize it at the time. Like, looking back, I know now it's like, okay, they want a champion that's going to promote them. Right. They don't want a champion that's like, oh, I fucking don't want to be here. I want to go to the UFC, you know. At the time, I didn't really realize that. And so, anyway, it worked out. Sarah McMahon was supposed to fight Sarah Kaufman. And Sarah Kaufman turned down the fight for some reason. And since she did that, then the UFC called me. And basically, like, they called Shannon Knapp, and they were like, we're going to take Warren. You know, like mm-hmm. I think they probably bought out my contract, or Invicta has some, I'm sure Invicta has some agreement with the UFC. Like, I don't really know the details of all of that, but my manager did it, and he got it done. And so that was how I ended up getting signed. But somebody in the UFC needs a fight. Or at least somebody in the UFC needed a fight for me to get signed. It wasn't like they signed me and then gave me a fight, you know?
So, I mean, end of the day, it's kind of like any other job in the world, man. You got to have the qualifications first. It's got to be an open position second, you know? And you got to be ready to take the call and make the move.
And that's one of the things, like you were saying, like with Paige. We used to train with Paige at Vendelis. And it's like that was when... It was really weird when women started coming over to the UFC, because Dana's like, no, no, no. And then they have like Ronda, who's an outstanding like athlete. And then they start throwing in, not that Paige isn't a great athlete. When she started, she was a lower tier, but super marketable. Like, she was just really marketable. And they started doing that. And unfortunately, I'm glad it isn't that way now, because the women's divisions they're killers. You guys are amazing and amazing to watch. And I don't remember, it was one fight I watched. It was like, I don't remember who it was a women's fight. I can't remember who exactly it was. I think it was Kat or somebody. And it was just a bloody war. And I remember sitting outside watching. I was like, man, and this is, long time ago, I was like, they are killing each other. And then you guys started outperforming the men fighters, and it was like, oh, this is amazing. Because I've always trained with women, and you know that you guys go just as hard or harder. And it's like, when they started kind of trying to throw in the looks and the model aspect of the women fighters, I was like, fuck, they're gonna make it kind of a prop. And then it was great to see people like you that would come in, and even like Cyborg, like she's a monster, and she will just destroy people. And it's like, they didn't like her because she wasn't marketable enough, and she was just her own being. But then it was like, it was amazing to watch. Like, you guys just were able to take over with your talents and kind of just shut them up and take it, like take control out of their hands, because people want to see the women fight now. And it's great.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Especially now, I feel like I've done a lot better about like being better on the mic and kind of cleaning up my image and making sure I don't look like too homeless, you know, when people are taking pictures and stuff. But for the most part, I think that's just going to be a thing that women have to deal with probably in all kind of aspects of life. It's definitely not just the UFC. It's probably all athletics, and it happens in offices and corporate, you know, settings everywhere. And the men deal with it too. Like, a marketable man is going to get more attention than, you know, one that wins all the time but isn't as marketable. So it's definitely not just a female thing either. But I've tried in the last couple years, like, to be a little bit better about it. But then it means I got to start giving up more shits about what people think. And that can be kind of hard. We have a lot of talks about that.
Yeah. But what other platform that women athletes are held at the same regards as the men athletes?
Like, there's not many. The UFC is one of the few where we're actually paid the same. We're given the same kinds of opportunities for the, you know, for the most part, like, we're treated exactly the same way the men are.
I mean, it's not like you have, oh, just women card, or, you know, just the men's card. You're fighters. And like, when you guys came in, it was like the women's tough. And I get that. And then you're like, okay, but it's just kind of gone away to where there's just fight talks now. It's not the women's division, just the women's division. It's like, you guys are in the same pressers, you're in the same promos. It's kind of surpassed. You don't have that in football or NBA, or I don't know any other, like, there's no other popular sport that happens.
No, and the pay scale is the same between us two. And I don't know any other professional sport where women are paid the same as the men. I think, honestly, MMA might be one of the only ones out there.
The only profession.
For a serious professional sport, like, it's, I mean, we're on the same pay scale as the men, which is great.
That'd be awesome.
You know, obviously, everybody always kind of brings up fighter pay in general, that it, like, should be more to begin least everybody's on the same scale.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be pretty shitty. But, you know, there is, you know, obviously there's businesses that do it all day.
10 and 10 for entry level. The men make 20 and 20. It's not like that, though. You know, everybody makes the same entry level. If, yeah, like when you get bumped up, they have pay tiers, basically, yeah, like for however many fights you have and have won and blah, blah, blah. And then
same pay scale for your, you know, Reebok, you know, still amount of fights.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to do with so, wins, anything like that, you know.
A superstar might make more, like Paige VanZant's a good example, or like Michelle Waterson. Like, those girls are marketable, so obviously they're going to make more money than me. But that's the same for the men, too. Like, a marketable man is going to make more, like, in sponsorships and endorsements and bonuses and things like that.
That's not even necessarily a sexist or even a, you know, based on looks thing. I mean, that's the promoter business, period.
That's business, yeah. I mean,
any local promotion, any, you know, Muay Thai fight, anything, you know, like, fighter job is to fight, yeah, but really it's to put asses in seats.
Yeah,
that's it, you know?
Yeah. So you get into the UFC, you get the call. What are the nerves in the preparation? Is it heightened because it's the UFC, or are you already a fighter? Like, what is your mindset there?
No, I was nervous. I was really nervous. I was like, I always have like, well, and it's gotten better over the years. I've been in the UFC for like 7 years now. So it's been almost a decade where I've gotten to work on this. But like when I first got into the UFC, I really wasn't very confident. I wasn't the type of fighter that was like, yeah, I'm going to beat this bitch's ass or whatever. I just didn't feel that way. You okay, Marge? Sorry, our dog's coughing. Okay. She's so funny. So, no, I was really nervous, and I didn't feel very confident. And when I went into my first fight, I really just had very little confidence, actually. I think it showed. And part of it was from the move. Like, we had changed camps. Suddenly, I'm on this big stage. You know, we talk about, like, we were just talking about being marketable and stuff. And so I had a lot more exposure online, which can be really, like, hard to see everybody's opinions of you.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly everybody has one. And so anyway, yeah, it really took a lot of adjusting. It took me several years to, like, find my groove and really start believing in myself and realize how important confidence is. For a long time, especially in Invicta, I tried to be, like, really humble and quiet, make everybody like me, always say the right thing, be, like, very sweet all the time, say the perfect shit in my interviews. And nobody gave a shit. Like, nobody paid any attention, you know? And I went through a phase when I was in the UFC too, like around like 2015, 2016, where I talked a lot of shit because I thought that was the way, like, to get attention. I thought that was the way to be more marketable. I didn't like it really. Like, it put too much pressure on myself. But yeah, it's just been a process of finding like my mental groove, and I'm still learning to believe in myself a lot, but it's gotten a lot better in the last couple of years.
Oh yeah. If you watch any of your post fights now, you're pretty confident and very, very aware of where you should be, and that's huge.
Today that we're talking, I feel like I could beat Valentina. I want the UFC to give me a shot at it. I really feel like I can.
There's no reason you shouldn't have the shot. There's none.
We've been singing it for a while now, man. I don't know, you know, what the holdup is there, but. Yeah, there's no one more deserving of it in the division.
Not at all.
I mean, Andrade came in and, you know, took out number one in the first round. That's impressive, you know. So, and Andrade is a former champ. So, if we kind of get pushed to the side because of that, she gets some star power, former champion. Okay, all right, we can swallow that one, you know. But book that already, man. Like, why haven't they fought then? If they're not going to fight, then I know someone who will.
I think one of them's injured because Valentina said at the last post fight when she fought Maya, she was like, I really want a quick turnaround. Yeah. She said, I think Lauren Murphy and Andrade should fight for number one contender, but she said, I don't want to wait that long to fight. But then I haven't heard anything from either of them. The UFC told me that they're going to fight next. And I was like, okay, well, hopefully we'll book that really soon. And then I can fight the winner.
Yeah.
There's just been no word from either camp. So I think one of them is injured. But that's crazy because if one of them is injured, then I should fight the other.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
So how did, like, I mean, you stated, one, I'm going to make a statement that the UFC needs, with all the money and everything they had, they need to keep their website updated. They have you fighting out of Arizona on a 3-fight win streak. So I was like, okay. But, like, how do you deal with knowing the work you put in? And then, I mean, obviously I don't want you to badmouth your employer, but, like, these rankings for everyone are insane. Like, typically it's kind of like a crapshoot of popularity, mostly. Obviously, you know, injuries come into play with how matchups, you know, last minute matchups make, but not the rankings themselves. Like, I know lots of people love Connor, but how can you be inactive for so long and be like number one? Yeah. So, like, how does that affect, like, a fighter that has that's put in what you have, and you're kind of just like seeing, leaving it up to somebody else to kind of tell you where your place is?
Some days it's hard. Like, some days I take it really personally and it makes me sad. And then some days I don't give a shit because I love to fight and I love my job. And, like, I don't really care about the rankings. As long as I just keep winning or keep loving what I'm doing, I'm good, you know? It's not even really about winning. Like, as long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing daily, then fuck the rankings. And then sometimes, like, my coaches or Joe, sometimes they get upset for me. They're like, this is bullshit.
I'm sure.
Because they put in a lot of time and effort and work too, and, like, we all want to see it be rewarded. But yeah, like, we were just talking about it this week. I'm like, can you imagine if Macy Barber went on a 4-fight win streak?
She would have had a title shot two fights ago.
She'd be ranked number one. Like, and it's fine. I'm sure it has to do with marketability. I also believe that the UFC can market pretty much whoever they want. They can.
Oh yeah.
It takes one word from Dana at a press conference to change MMA media's mind about somebody. Right. It takes, like, one little piece in a promo for the public to really start getting on board. And so I just need to convince them that I'm worth that. And so I'm still working on that part. next fight will be one that does it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, what do they want to see? They want to know if you can juggle? Like, what is the next thing? Like you said, you tried shit talking, you've backed it all up, you go to pressers, you like, what I see now is you're very confident in being what the fighter that you are, and so you're not stating anything that's not a fact as far as your fight history, your win streaks, what you do in fights, what they can expect. I mean, it's not like shit that you're making up. You know, it's not like, when I used to fight in Florida, you know, in the swamps, I used to do that. No, you did this shit on the biggest stage. It's like, what more are they looking for? And I mean, you didn't start like, I just had a fighter on that. He's 22 and he's already got 2 pro fights. And it's like, you didn't start at, you know, 16 years old. So getting older sucks. Trust me, I just turned 40 fucking 6. So it's like doing what you do, it's far beyond, I believe, is like a football. Like, football is long and tedious, whereas, like, you go into a cage with another human to kill each other. Yeah. Like, one person has to give up, or a innocent bystander has to go, you're going to kill this person, stop. Like, that's it. So, I mean, like, so what MMA and fighting does is so extreme, it takes a toll on your body. Like, like, we haven't even been around long enough to know how much it's going to cause, you know, long-term damage. And you don't want, I mean, I can't say you wouldn't want to fight forever, but, like, you're gonna know that you can't fight forever. Does it bother you on that aspect that they kind of are waiting and waiting and waiting?
I'm just now starting to hit my peak. But it's,
okay.
Because I've only been training about 10 years. And they say you have about 10 years at the highest level. So I definitely wasn't at the highest level when I started training.
Right.
I think I've only been at the highest level for about the last 4 years, I would say. And, I think I have at least, like, 3 more years of really, really good high-level performances in me.
With continued improvement.
with continued improvement. So I think I haven't quite hit my peak yet, but I'm definitely, like, I really believe it's in my DNA to be a great athlete. I believe that with, like, everything in me, that I can train my body to, like, jump higher and run faster and hit harder. I think I still have a lot of room for improvement in those areas, and I don't think my body's maxed out. And really, as long as I keep, like, as long as I feel that way, I'm good to go, man. I have a really, really good athletic trainer. I don't know. All I can tell you is I'm still getting more athletic, which is awesome. If I was kind of, like, still learning skills but getting less athletic, that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. That day's going to come, but I don't think it's going to come for another couple years.
And so, I mean, there's a couple other things I want to get to, but how do you beat the champ? Obviously, don't give me your game plan, but you guys watch these things. This is your competition. This is your rivals. You're watching everything that they do. What are other people missing that you have?
Well, first of all, I'm the strongest woman in the division, and that's a fact. That's not me. That's not me.
I think your arms show that. You're jacked.
Basically, I went to the PI. I went to the Performance Institute, and they compare your data to everybody mm-hmm. in your division. And literally, I'm off the charts for strength.
Black and white.
Like, yeah, so I'm one of the strongest women in the division. So if I get my hands on you, you're going to have a pretty fucking hard time getting out. Secondly, I'm really goddamn good at jiu-jitsu. I'm a really good wrestler. I'm not the best kickboxer, I do admit, but I may have the hardest head. seriously, in the entire UFC, I'm Darren Elkins might be tougher than me. He's kind of the only one that really comes to mind. And Brian Barberina. They're the only two I can think of where I'm like, maybe. If you, like, hit those guys with baseball bats, they're probably not going to stop. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I think I've got to be in the top five.
Brian, for sure. Be like, you just hit me with a bat?
Yeah, like, of just UFC fighters, I think I'm in the top 1 percentile for toughness. I really think that. Like, they're, especially for the women. So, I don't know.
Valentina's not tough.
Obviously. Not that she's not tough, but just right. I just know that
she's,
like,
got her hands full, period.
I'm extremely durable. I have a really big heart. I'm not going to quit. I have great cardio too, which is another thing. I don't gas in my fights. I don't know. I think I have a lot of really good attributes that would play well, especially into a 5-round fight. Yeah. But a lot of it is just, like, my toughness, my cardio.
You're gone.
My grappling and my strength.
So you just outfight her.
I have the best team in the world as well. I don't know much about Valentina's team, but I know it's not as good as mine.
We have. Sure. I take quite a bit of pride in that too. Not like I'm a great coach, but how we've compiled a pretty kick-ass team over the years, man. We've got a lot of, and we're not all, you know, centrally located either, but we got a lot of great people contributing to Team Murphy.
Sorry about the dog.
If I would let mine, he'd be up here, but I'm in just one chair, so. He's just sitting here staring at me. So
she just doesn't care.
So when we talked before, you were getting ready, like it was a couple of weeks before the Las Vegas to Fight Island for that fight. What's Fight Island? Like, what is the process? Like, how did that go down?
You mean like
the experience? Yeah. What's that?
Our experience at Fight Island.
Like how did the process go? What was it like getting there and being there and the atmosphere, all that?
Well, initially, there's always like the pre-Fight Island Vegas thing. Dana White's a fucking man. For being able to put on as much as he did during a year when like the whole country was on lockdown and all athletics were suffering from this pandemic. He pulled out every stop, implemented every security and safety measure, and put together tons of kick-ass events. And it was at a great cost, but
man,
it was worth it. So.
Man, so we flew out to Vegas. Well, come up here then. You can't just stand in front of the camera. We flew out. Well, actually, they send you a
COVID test.
A COVID test to take.
At home,
about 2 weeks before the fight. So you take it, and you take it over, like, Skype, just like this, but with a nurse, and a nurse watches, like, there'll be, like, 8 people at a time, and you all log in, and everybody, like, does their own COVID test. They stick the thing up their nose, And then they put it in a tube and you like have to ship it some special way to the UFC. And if you pass that, then you can go to Vegas. So everybody gets on the plane, they go to Vegas, they pick you up from the airport. For us, they picked us up from the airport, took us to a pregnancy test, like at a doctor's office, and then took us to the hotel. But anything you need to do, you have to do before you go to the hotel. Because once you get to the hotel in Vegas, you're not leaving. Okay. You're not allowed to go get groceries. You're not allowed to nothing. So you get kind of locked up in this hotel for a couple days.
Well, as soon as you get there, they COVID test you again.
Oh, yeah. You get another COVID test, yeah.
And that's why you're locked up for a couple days. So first, the following morning is the kind of who made the cut and who didn't. That's when they're literally sending people home. Hey, you passed test one, but you didn't pass test two. So
really?
Which is actually what happened to Cynthia Calvillo for the Fight Island fight for us. Mm-hmm. At the hotel in Vegas, day two. And she failed her first in-person COVID test in Vegas. They retested her just to be sure. But she failed the second one. So
yeah. So they test you in Vegas, I think twice,
yep.
Right?
Two times.
And then if everything's good to go in Vegas, and then you get on a jet to Abu Dhabi, and it's a straight flight, but it's a private jet. Well, it's an Etihad jet. So, Dana booked all these private flights for everybody, or they're chartered. Private flight, but
Yeah. So no one, the flight is literally just
UFC fighters and their cornermen. And so we all get on this flight. The fighters got to go first class and business class. So the main card fighters, the main event guys and co-main event, they got to sit up in first class. They basically had apartments. And mm-hmm. Etihad is the best airline out there. And so they basically had apartments that they got to sit in right up front and get champagne and caviar and
whatever you want.
And then we rode in business class together, which was cool because usually the corners have to sit and coach, but they let Joe ride with me up in business class, so that was nice. So we were playing Battleship and watching movies, and we would watch them on our split screen, and then be okay, we have to push play at the same time. And it was a cool flight.
16 hours.
It was 16 yeah. hours. And then when we landed in Abu Dhabi, there were fights going on when we landed there, and there were the fights the week prior to ours.
Right.
So we got to Abu Dhabi, and I think we went to bed that night, and the next day was when Jessica Andrade fought Caitlin Chookagian on Fight Island and TKO'd her in the first round, and I was fuck, because I knew it was going to bump everybody down the rankings and fuck up the division, especially a first round TKO. I was shit. But, and then so we had to quarantine in the W Hotel for 3 days.
Yeah.
And they test you as soon as you get there. Everybody's walking around the hotel hazmat suits. Yeah. But the hotel staff is badass. They were cheering when we all got off the bus to go into the hotel. They're all clapping, cheering. There was a guy singing, yelling the champions are here, jumping up and down. They were throwing confetti. Yeah,
it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And those guys, the staff at the W Hotel quarantined away from their families for 2 weeks prior to not just Lauren's event, but prior to the events at Fight Island in general, and then lived inside the bubble the entire duration.
Wow.
So there's the hotel where the fighters and UFC staff and everybody's staying, and there were three other hotels inside the bubble where the staff stayed when they weren't working. So those guys were super dedicated, man. They, those guys weren't way above and beyond. They were awesome.
Yeah. And they were happy to have fighters stay at the hotel too. They were really honored to have us, but I don't know if I've ever stayed in such a cool hotel with such great staff the whole time I fought for the UFC. So
yeah,
felt lucky, but yeah, it was a really cool experience. And then while we were there, we were allowed to go to the beach. So you could get security or something to take you on a golf cart, down the road. It's not very, 100 yards or something to the beach.
Yeah.
And then, they closed the beach though, for the events after hours, people weren't allowed to go to the beach. I don't know why. I thought we did a pretty good job, keeping it clean and anybody got COVID. We rode jet skis and stuff. It was fun, But then after our event, they said no more beach. The guys just had to stick around the hotel, which isn't – the W is not bad, but it's like, you know, you get a little antsy. And plus, it's not like a regular fight week. Regular fight week, you're there for like 5 days. Yeah, so yeah. You get on – regular fight week, you get in on Tuesday. Usually, if you're going to do anything, it's got to be on Wednesday. But then you also have media. A lot of guys are cutting weight Thursday. You weigh in Friday. You fight Saturday. You go home Sunday. But on Fight Island, you get in on Saturday, you quarantine Sunday and Monday, so you're not doing shit. Yeah. I think you can get out of quarantine on Tuesday, and then you have more COVID tests to take, and then you can go on with your media and stuff. But a lot of that gets taken care of while you're quarantined, so it's a much longer fight week.
Yeah. Is it better or worse in your experience? Like,
it was way better, but for us, it was way better because we had a corner suite at the hotel, which was...
We went on that kick-ass vacation, and that's a whole other story. But as far as hotels go, that's the nicest place I've ever stayed.
Yeah, it was awesome. The UFC really did right by us for that trip.
So Cynthia,
is that the one that's right at the racetrack?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. The F1 track goes through the middle. You gotta love
yeah,
it.
That's insane.
Yeah. So when Cynthia tested positive, Mick kind of started scrambling, looking for a replacement opponent. He called it and said, like, hey, Cynthia tested positive. And, like, as soon as you see Mick Maynard's name on the phone, when it's fight week, you know it's bad news.
Yeah, it's going to be bad if they got to get a hold of you during fight week.
So Lauren basically just said, like, I'll fucking fight anybody. Yeah, put me on the plane, I'll fight anyone.
I really wanted the Fight Island experience. Mick was like, you can wait a couple weeks and fight Cynthia, like, whenever she doesn't have any symptoms. So whenever she tests negative, basically, she can fight.
And which I was like, an option for us, but
I was like, fuck no, I want the Fight Island experience. I want to ride on the private fucking jet. Yeah. I want to stay in the W Hotel. I want to see the fucking beach. I want to ride this jet skis. Like, fuck that. I want to go to Abu Dhabi, man. Like,
right?
Fucking home because Cynthia got COVID.
Yeah.
So, yeah, did that.
I'm going to beat you, man.
Yeah, I know. And I even wrote to Cynthia. I was like, man, I'm really sorry. Like, I wasn't – I genuinely felt bad for her. Like, was literally like, man.
Not only would it have been a great fight, but, yeah, it's a bummer she had to miss that.
And it would have been a number one contender fight, too, or at least that's what they were saying at the time, you know. And so, anyway, I wrote to her, and I was just like, I'm really sorry. It sucks. Like, I hope, you know, you feel better soon or whatever I said. It was something very nice, you know.
Right.
She just wrote back, said, yeah, it feels like a bad dream. And then she started talking shit about me in all her interviews. So, fuck Cynthia Campillo.
Maybe she knows that she has to create the drama again to get the fight, so.
That whole marketability thing, it's whatever. But, yeah, so they ended up finding Lilia Shakharova.
That's amazing, the second round. We kind of, like, that was pretty cool, too, man. We were obviously in a pretty unique spot where, I mean, as much of a benefit as some people may have looked at that as, like, well, you're going from fighting, well, she's number four at the time or something like that.
I think she was number two.
Maybe, yeah. She was in the top five.
We were four and she was two.
Yeah, so top five opponent to a debut opponent, you know, brand new something. But that's fucking super risky. Like, we didn't know shit about her, you know?
And she was 8-1, and we watched the one that she lost, and it was like a controversial decision, so she could be like 9-0.
Yeah.
She was a champion of whatever promotion she fought Guerrilla Fights, and then like she had wrestled her whole life. Like, I went and peeped on her Instagram, and there's all these pictures of her wrestling as a little kid and stuff. I was like, fuck. Everybody's good in the UFC. Like, the only thing I kind of knew was that she'd probably be undersized.
Yeah.
Because generally a replacement that late can't cut weight.
Right.
But she's a 125er, so I was like, cool.
Yeah, all of her fights are at 125, but I would guess that she's probably going to drop 115 going forward.
Plus, I'm a giant flyweight. Like, I'm a really big flyweight. So I knew whoever, like, I just knew if they took it on a week, there's no way they'd be, like, as big as me, which kind of gave me some confidence. So.
So after that, you get the dream vacation, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, we... I think even before the fight.
We've been talking about going to the Maldives for a while.
Well, you had told me about it last time, and you said...
Oh, yeah, I think it was after the Roxanne fight. I was like, you know what? We did so good this year. That was such a tough fight with Andrea Lee, and like, we're going to go fight Roxanne, who's like a legend. I was like, we really deserve like a reward after this, you know? And I think we were going to go...
So originally our plan was to do Maldives... Or the same resort, same amount of times that we did, and then do Amsterdam on the way back home.
Yeah, we were going to go to Amsterdam.
Amsterdam ain't having us dirty Americans.
Yeah, they wouldn't take an American passport, so we ended up, I looked at countries that would take Americans, and Egypt was on the list. And so I was like, hey, do you want to go see the pyramids in Egypt? And Joe was like, well, fuck yeah. So we changed all our plans, and we ended up booking tickets to go to Egypt for like 3 days. And then we went to the Maldives after that for like 9 days.
So you were in that bungalow thing on the water for that long?
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
It becomes like home, and you're like, I could just live here.
Canada, that's the only place. We've been to a bunch of cool places. We've been a bunch of traveling together. You know, that's the only place that, like, first, we were there for a couple days. Usually when you travel, you know, a couple days in, you're like, all right, I'm ready to get back to my normal life, go home. Nope, absolutely.
Yeah. Like,
I'll stay here for a month. Love this place.
God, we could have stayed there for a long time.
And after we left, I'm like, I want to go back to the same place.
Yeah.
Let's do it again, for sure. That place was amazing. Coleman Resorts, Maldives. That place is amazing.
Those little bungalows, I think that's the only thing like that in beautiful water that people know about the place.
And the whole thing was great, man. Like, we just had to, you know, so we flew, like Lauren said, we did Egypt first, and then we flew from Egypt to Malé, which is the capital city of the Maldives. We took a smaller plane from Malé to the closest island to the resort. So it was like an hour and a half flight from Malé to this much, much smaller island. And then we got on a boat from that island and drove the boat to the resort. So the resort is the only thing on this island.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of resorts in the Maldives are. There's so many islands in the Maldives, and they're pretty tiny that a resort will just have the whole island to itself. And so generally, I mean, a lot of them will have overwater bungalows plus some beach bungalows. And then they have their own restaurants. They'll have, like, living quarters for the staff. So the place that we stayed, Pullman, has five restaurants on the island, couple different bars. It has, like, three different swimming pools, like, on different parts of the island. It has different places you can go snorkeling. It has just anything. It had, like, yoga you could do and a big old cabin for kids with, like, PlayStation and
this little rec center, basically.
A rec center, yeah. They had bikes you could rent to get all over the island. So it was cool. And we had the ability to stay busy, but we didn't really want to. We spent a lot of time just laying around.
Chilling.
I had a really big, thick book that I was really liking, and I just spent a lot of time, like, reading and laying in the sun, eating.
Hard to travel?
It definitely had some challenges, yeah. We had to work hard to make it work, but it was worth the amount of work that we put in.
Yeah.
We got a COVID test the day we left the States. So we got a COVID test on the way to the airport, and we were able to show the results. It was like a 1 hour rapid response or whatever. We showed the results to the people at the gate. They don't let you on the plane without a COVID test. Right. We got another COVID test while we were in Egypt, and that was kind of hard for us to schedule. It was a lot of Googling, a lot of like international calling, going to like websites. Everything's in Arabic, so like we didn't even, it's not like Spanish where you can kind of guess, like pretty close. Like Arabic, the fucking alphabet's not even the same. So we ended up having a tour guide that took us around for a few days, and we basically made him take us to a clinic so we could get another COVID test. That was a rapid response, so when we left Egypt we could show them that one. The COVID test has to be within 72 hours of flying.
Right.
So we got one in the States, one in Egypt, and then when we got to the Maldives, the resort actually had somebody on site that would give you a COVID test. So, they send somebody to your bungalow over the water, and they COVID test you right there on the deck. So,
if you get it, they just put, like, a gate up, and you just have to stay out there. Like, all right.
We have not had COVID.
Which is nuts.
It's crazy, because we live in Texas, which is a huge hotspot for it. And we're not
traveled all over the world.
We've traveled everywhere. He's going to Vegas
the entire time.
I've done three fight camps. Neither one of us have had COVID, but when we were in the Maldives, they're like, okay, if you test positive and you can't leave the resort, we will give you a special rate. Like, you have to stay until you test negative, we'll give you a special rate. It's like, so we were like, please.
If you're like, if I gotta get it.
I was like, test me again. Are you sure?
Like, how do you can't just put the, oh, is it the thermometer on the light bulb? You know, you're like, how do we trick this thing? That's crazy. Like, man, I wonder what the rate is. Like,
50% off. It's like, they really give you a good deal if you end up getting stuck.
Still super expensive.
Still a little pricey, but we would have been happy. Yeah. We would have been happy to have COVID there.
Yeah. I mean, be stuck in your house or some random hotel, or I'd be stuck in a beautiful bungalow overlooking the water. So,
can I show you something? Can I just look at?
Yep. Yeah, mine does the same thing. It's like no matter where you are, he has to move. And be right on top of you. He's sitting right on the bed just looking at me. So he's like, are you done? So what's next? Where are we going? What's going on? No, Joe, you just had an announcement. I mean, you've been doing big things with the gym and the academies, opening new academies and things like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of the next thing, I guess, for Team Murphy as a whole. I do have a jiu-jitsu title match for Submission Hunter Pro March 15th, Sunday. So 1 month exactly from today. I'll compete for their 170 no-gi title. It's going to be a super tough match. You got a really tough opponent.
Who are you facing?
A guy named Jose Yanez from Team Took here in Houston. So, going to be a great match. Committed, dedicated, working my butt off. I'm super excited about it. So what really happened, man, was Lauren went and won the Sub-Hunter belt for a 135 no-gi and got the title and brought it home. And it looks pretty sweet sitting on the shelf, so I got jealous. I got to get it.
I just saw Joe Schilling at the High Rollers tournament.
Really? Was he competing?
Yes.
That's awesome.
I was. But did you see the what they got when they won?
Yeah. So you want to tell me about the prize there, Kelly?
Yeah, it's about that much weed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Big, ridiculous container, like a huge, like a cartoon cookie jar.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Where's this?
High Rollers in Vegas. It was I knew a bunch of people that had went, and I was watching it, and I'm like, Joe Schilling? Like, I didn't really know he was into jiu-jitsu, but I guess, I mean, it's motivation.
The violent man, Joe Schilling is.
Yeah, he's the killer. So what's going on? What's next for Lauren? Like, what is on the horizon?
I'm not really sure right now. I really was hoping to fight the winner of Andrade versus Shevchenko, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm going to keep pushing for that. They're going to set up other fights in the division while we're waiting on that, though, and that's probably going to change the ranking. So I probably will end up fighting again before I fight for the title, but we're just going to have to wait. Like Dana says, we're going to have to see how this thing plays out, you know? Like, That's what we're doing. And I don't really mind. It was really nice to stay so busy last year, get all that cage time, get a lot of experience. I think it's important, but it's not necessary, you know, for me to stay busy. Like, we're good doing what we're doing. And I'm really getting better right now. I'm working super hard. So
She doesn't have a fight scheduled, you know, but Lauren's schedule looks like she's in fight camp right now. She's training her butt off.
Yeah, I do 2 days every day, and they're mostly technique-based. So I'm really, really improving my skill sets. And like I said, I have a really good team out here. So like I get a lot of everything. I spar a lot throughout the week, like 3 to 4 times a week I'm sparring. I'm wrestling 3 to 4 times a week. I'm doing jiu-jitsu with Joe. I just get a lot of really good work in. And so I feel motivated because I know that my next performance is going to just blow everybody's mind. Like, and that's really what I really want to do is I want to go out and be aggressive and get a finish my next fight. And I want people's jaw to drop open. So we always have like ideas of what we want to work on specifically, but we have like a list of stuff right now that we're kind of just making sure we're checking off every day. And it's pretty structured training. I don't just like do what I feel like doing. I have a schedule and I really stick to it.
I know fighters that do the opposite. the out of camp, John Jones-esque, I train to kind of just train. And I mean, I feel like it works for somebody at that level, like John Jones is just that athlete. But mm-hmm. in a whole, I feel like I see the difference between something like you're doing and the work you put in. And it's like this, it's like climbing a mountain. You're always progressing. It's where you see the guys that kind of are training when they have to. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you've lost the passion.
Like yeah.
you don't love it. So you're doing it kind of to stay in shape because everyone knows you as a fighter. And then when it's fight time, you have to ramp it up so high
that
the results kind of are all over. Whereas like yours, if you're doing it all the time, they're just building on each other and they're just getting better.
Yeah, exactly. And I know like where my weak areas are. So it's like, I'll make a list of those. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to work on these for the next 2 months or whatever it is, or like the next 6 weeks or something like that. And I'll stick to it, you know, and we've seen a lot of improvement in some areas, but I try to do less. Like when fight camp comes around, I knock a bunch of shit off my schedule and I sleep a lot more. I recover a lot more. I rest a lot more. So I really try to do less when I'm in fight camp. So if I, like, last Friday I did 3 workouts in one day. I, like, did, like, a heavy lift, and then I went to striking. I went home and slept for a while, and then I wrestled hard that night. And, like, I probably would not do something like that in camp because it's just too much, and then I'm smoked for, like,
2 days after.
2 days afterwards. So, it's like, if I was in camp, I would do, like, a really focused session in the morning. If I did, like, strength training, it would be something really light, like, just to make me faster. Mm-hmm. And then I would do something super focused, like executing a game plan with my striking coach. Like, we would be solely focused on the fight. But right now, I can just go work on all the shit I'm bad at, so.
It's got to be a plus to have Joe around, because as a coach, I've been able to go, hey, you fucking suck at this. We need to work on this, right? To your student or whatever it may be. But Joe's got an in. He can kind of word it to where you'll be more receptive of it. Doesn't that kind of help the dynamic? Oh, or does she just not listen to you?
She's super coachable. You know, I'm on top of Lauren always being dedicated. You know, I say that all the time. I've worked with a bunch of athletes, and Lauren's one of the few who I know, like, if I say, hey, do this and do it 10 times, like, I can turn my back and walk away, and she's probably going to do it 12 times. You know, mm-hmm. Without question, she's going to do what she's supposed to do. But she's usually, like, another props to her and her athletic careers that she's usually the one, you know, instead of me going like, hey, you know, you fucking suck at this, or like, hey, we should maybe focus on this a little bit more. She's really good at identifying areas that she wants to improve on, and that she feels like, hey, I don't feel like I'm very good in this particular spot. How can I get better at that? Like, what can we work on? Let's develop a system. Or let's just spend X amount of time per week in just this one spot. And, honestly, it's made it really easy for me. So I'm like, I agree.
All right, no problem.
It's more often that I'll come to Joe and we've been filming a lot of my training sessions lately, a lot of my sparring, and even just, like, drilling stuff we'll film. But a lot of, like anything live that I do, I try to get on film, and then I'll come back to Joe and we'll review it. And then that makes it easy, too, because I can see what he's talking about, where he'll be like, look, your hand is here, or, like, you need to step here instead of doing that. And so it makes it a lot easier when you can play it back, because sometimes in the moment, he's like, hey, you need to grab at the knee. And I'm like, I fucking am. And he's like, I'm watching you, and you're not. But, like, to me, it feels like I am. And then I'll go back and look at the video. I'm like, oh, I'm not. Okay, you're right. Yeah. So I mean, that stuff really helps.
It goes back to even, like, you telling anyone, keep your hands up when you're striking. Keep your hands up. Keep your fucking hands up. I am. And they're, you're down here. And it's like, no, they're not up. And like, yeah, no, they are. And then if you show a video, because I do the same thing, like in a fight camp, I like to record all just the, like, even the pad work and clinch work and things like that. And I'd be like, look, this is what we did, or this is what, you know, we needed to work more on. But that's like, hands up is one of the fucking most basic things. Like, when I run a class, I'm just screaming it all the time. It's like, but that's the thing though, is like, once you can see yourself doing it wrong, you're kind of like, oh, you're right. Okay. You know?
And when you get to see yourself doing something right, it has I know there's something behind it, like some long scientific thing that somebody smarter than me, but it helps you retain that information so much better when you see yourself do something correctly. and you can remember what it felt like to do that sequence. You know, yeah. It really helps a lot.
Well, you won. Like, you're winning. You know you did it right. You're like, oh, that's it. I won. So you can keep doing that. It's a good feeling, right? All right, guys. I don't want to keep you too much longer. Anything, shout-outs, people you want to talk about? Anything else you want to throw in there?
Just the usual. You want to shout out your sponsors?
Yeah, sponsors. Yeah.
We've been drinking blackout coffee like crazy today. It's so cold here.
Yeah, Houston's super cold.
It's like we're having like a blizzard right now. Like it's supposed to snow in parts of Texas. In fact, I think El Paso got a shitload of snow.
Dallas got some.
And Dallas got some. So anyway, we've been just guzzling blackout coffee. And they started making loose leaf tea, which is the shit.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. All their links are in my bio, like on my Instagram and stuff. So I'm taking a little break from Twitter. Fuck shitter. But you can come find me on Instagram. And yeah, and the blackout coffee stuff is just the shit. So they've been really good to us.
I always want to shout out the World Clan guys. You know, Marco at Chili Roll is great, hooking me up with a sponsorship with A&P. So Amano and Pizzo's been keeping me looking good. I got a pretty cool project going on this year. I'm doing one like technique of the week video on my Instagram page. So just kind of giving out some free content. Every week I do the technique of the week video. I also do a giveaway. So I'm giving away. Sometimes it's like tickets to local events. I'm giving away some like fan memorabilia, like just always some pretty cool shit. So, check that out. You know, if your viewers want to get some free jiu-jitsu techniques and maybe some free stuff too, give that a look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, you guys should collaborate. Like, we'll give away something from your fight shop.
Heck yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that'd
definitely. And we just did it. I've been working with Defense Soap for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And those guys are great, and we're doing a giveaway with them right now. So, but
that's awesome. That is a good company.
I trained at some of the grimiest gyms in Thailand, grimy, and never caught anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did you read that about them?
Oh, Lumpini's getting shut down?
No, they somehow countered that, and
oh,
they're going to keep it open.
Okay. Yeah. I just saw a headline about it. Somebody reshared it, but yeah, I was like, oh, that's fucking sad, but they're not going to, huh?
No, that was a huge thing, is they were like, I don't even – there's military, and the way that politicians work there is really weird. Like, I saw those headlines, and I'm like, we'll see. And then this week, a lot of the promoters and things were like, we saved Lumpini, and they'll still be fighting there. And they scheduled shows. Because Thailand shuts down, like crazy shuts down, and then opens back up.
Huh.
Like, there was some COVID cases near Bangkok. Everything shut down again. Like, just – it was done. But then now they've opened back up the gyms. They've opened like within a couple weeks. So, I mean, they had no case, like very, very few cases for a long time. And then so when they saw the few cases pop up, they just immediately just did the same thing they did the first time. It's like everything's closed.
Yeah.
I mean, they've killed their economy. It's so bad. I have some friends that have businesses, and it's like they've just destroyed so many businesses. But what are you going to do? It's the world, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That sucks. Well, this was great. I'm glad we were able to hook back up.
Thank you guys so much. Again, happy Valentine's Day. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
These two, I cannot get over these dogs. Crawled in Joe's lap.
We had them on the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You have a wonderful night. And Joe, yeah, I'll hit you up about a couple other things I got an idea for.
Cool.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you once again for listening to the number one combat sports podcast, the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast. You can follow us on Fight Chase on all the social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And also, don't forget you can support us at any time going to the anchor.fm/fightchase, hit the support icon, and you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month. We truly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. And Kurt, don't say boom.
Boom.
Oh, it's a big kibosh! Lobs out moisture, seals in freshness. Goodness!